Good morning. Oh, that's friendly. Thank you. Thanks for letting me join you as you reflect together on Micah 6:8. Is it still there? Yeah, it is. One of the most important sayings of the Hebrew prophets. I sometimes refer to it as freeze-dried prophets. It's, you know, when you go to the grocery store, sometimes you can find these little packets of stuff down at the checkout aisle, and you take them home and you put them in a bucket of water or something, and they grow. Those little dinosaurs are sort of all of a sudden big. You got to be a little careful not to let them soak too long, lest you create your own Jurassic Park, you know, which could be a little of a problem. But Micah 6 is a bit like that, except that when you soak in it for a while, you get a huge dose of what the prophets have to say. And you've been soaking in it, and I'm glad to be here to join in that with you. So look again at this simple but profound verse. What does the Lord require of you? To act justly and to love mercy and to walk humbly with your God. Now, you've learned through others that doing justice and taking active steps to see that justice gets done is one of the things that God most cares about. In the second phrase, the common translation, I don't know which ones you've had in the weeks preceding, but the common translation, love kindness, is good, but a little weak at the knees, actually. And even love mercy is good, too. But neither of them capture the intensity of the gutsy Hebrew word chesed, which is used here. The word chesed is, we often translate as steadfast love or as loving kindness, but it's the characteristic of God that we cherish and can rely on. It's a God's never give up on you love, the love that chases after you endlessly, the love that wants the best for you, a best that might be beyond our wildest dreams. And we're invited to share in that love, to practice that love ourselves. It's a compassionate faithfulness to others in our own actions. So this phrase expresses well the biblical command to love your neighbor, that kind of sturdy, always after you, looking out for the best in you kind of love. Well, this morning I want to suggest that we can't act justly or love boldly if we don't learn how to walk humbly with God. Without the last phrase, we'll too easily act in self-interested or in shallow ways. I mean, we always want justice for ourselves. And we like to be loved, but we need to think about what walking humbly with God means. Now, I'm not going to say very much about being humble. It's an important topic, and we can take active steps toward developing humility, and I recommend that. At the same time, however, that too could become a path to self-interest or self-sufficiency of find it in our strength to become more humble with the steps that we take and so on. And when you look at posters and mugs and plaques and shirts that have this verse on it or some version of it, you often see the shorthand, walk humbly, as the slide behind shows. But that's not enough. Seeking humility for its own sake leaves out the empowering relationship with God that makes it possible to live in the way that God calls us. We need the reality of with your God. So let's be brief on humility. I'll make a few remarks here. First, the key to humility is for each of us to recognize that there is a God and to know that we're not God, despite the temptation to take that spot. or to add an update I recently saw from an African archbishop using the New Testament. The good news is that the Messiah has come, and the better news is that it's not you. A second piece of being humble is to think that God might actually be pretty smart. Might actually know what God is up to in creating the world and suggesting the ways we might live in it. God created the world, broke into shouting that it was wonderful, terrific even, and God took a day off to enjoy it. God loves the world, is deeply engaged in the world, not distant, and works steadily to bring it again to its greatest glory. And we get to be in on it. So we can listen for guidance and we can pray, "Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth." That's part of humility. We can also remember that we are creatures, not the Creator. A bit over a week ago, Christians observed Ash Wednesday as the beginning of the period of Lent. An editor friend sent me a picture of a folder from an Ash Wednesday service, noting that it included an awkward typographical error. I'll pause for a moment. You can see. For those of you who don't proofread well, I'm sorry. Anyway. And another friend reminded us recently that we're made from stardust, literally dust that has come from the explosive growing universe, from the Big Bang that scattered dust everywhere, and that's somewhere in us. Now, not everybody likes being dust, so this little cartoon about Ash Wednesday and being a high-quality dust might suit them a little better. But now, whether we're sawdust or butt dust or some other kind of special kind of dust, we're creatures made from dust. And remembering that should keep us from getting uppity with God or with each other. So that's a brief little three-point reflection on being humble. This verse in Micah has long been one of my favorites, and as I begin my preparation for today, I had hoped that I could deepen my insight by digging around in the various ways that the Hebrew word translated humbly here is used in the Old Testament. I was disappointed to learn that it's only used twice in the Old Testament, here and in Proverbs 11:2, where it stands opposite of the word pride. Well, so much for deep word study, though I think the translation is a good one, and it's almost universally translated in that way. But the other critical word here doesn't need deep study. It's the word "with." It's a word that points to connectedness, to our relationship with God. And the Old Testament speaks of our relationship to God in many ways, but let's use two common ways this morning to guide us. The first is to walk in God's ways, and the second is to know God. In one of Moses' speeches to Israel in Deuteronomy, he says, "In light of all that God has done for you, what does the Lord ask of you?" Do you recognize the similarity to Micah 6? What does the Lord require? "Only this, to revere the Lord your God by walking in all his ways, by loving him, by serving the Lord your God with all your heart and being, and by keeping the Lord's commandments and his regulations that I'm commanding you right now. It's for your own good." Now remember here that the call to walking in God's ways is not simply about rule keeping. The Israelites deeply respected and delighted in God's teaching them. And the word Torah that we translate law is actually a Hebrew word behind that that has to do with teaching or guiding. And they were grateful for God's guidance about how to live well. So we have Psalms. The two best known would be Psalm 19 and Psalm 119, the longest of the Psalms, that thank God for God's teaching or Torah, that celebrate it, calling it more precious than gold, or sweeter than honey, treasured guidance for living. I enjoy Eugene Peterson's paraphrase, The Message, and in Psalm 19 he adds in a more modern phrase, it's better than strawberries and cream, he says, and those of us in Oregon appreciate what that can mean. Psalm 1 talks about two ways of living, the way of the righteous and the way of the wicked. And those who choose the way of the righteous, it says, meditate on Torah, on God's teaching, constantly. They give it steady attention. They soak in it. They chew on it. They internalize it. They immerse themselves in it. And as it guides their way for their own good and in collaboration with God's loving presence in the world, they are giving steady attention to God's guidance. And we too can learn to walk in God's ways by focusing our attention on what God has shown us. We can see it in Scripture, which shows us wise and just ways to live. We find steady themes about living well, not just in the law passages that we refer to as Torah, but also in the Psalms and wisdom literature such as Proverbs and Job, all over in the prophets, and you move on into the New Testament, you have the gospel stories, the life of the early church, and letters that have themes that we constantly look to find out what God's ways are, what walking in God's ways would mean. We can see it especially in staying close to Jesus, who showed us how human life can be lived, full of grace and truth. One of my mentors had a habit of reading a portion of the Gospels every day, and he was a very methodical guy, and he would pencil in the margin of his Bible what the date he read, the 8 or 10 verses he would read. But just hanging out with Jesus in that way through knowing Jesus in the Gospels is a wonderful practice. And of course, we can steadily learn to pay attention to Christ, who is present to us and teaching us and guiding us day by day. So again, walking with God means walking in God's ways. A second way the Old Testament talks about being in relationship with God is when it speaks about knowing God. This is not just a knowing about, which is a head sort of thing. It's knowing God, a heart thing, a completely wholehearted relational thing, as the great command requires, love God, the Lord your God, with all your heart, all your being, all your strength. And let's glance back at a text you've all already seen to remind us what knowing God means for us. In Jeremiah 9, 23 and 24, we have another little chunk of freeze-dried prophets, which means a lot to me. Jeremiah tells folks that they should not boast or congratulate themselves for being smart or strong or rich, which are kind of normal human boasts, both individuals and in cultures. He said, if you're going to congratulate yourself, and he's not saying don't pat yourself on the back. It's no oracle against boasting. But it says if you are going to congratulate yourself that you know God. Those who boast should boast in this, that they understand and know me. I am the Lord. who acts with kindness, justice, and righteousness in the world. And I delight in these things, declares the Lord. Now, note here a way that this connects especially to Micah. Two of the key words about knowing the Lord and knowing what God delights in are the same words that we have in the first two phrases in Micah 6:8. The words justice, mishpat, and the word love, chesed. These are things that God delights in. And the other word I find compelling in the Jeremiah passage is the word delight. It points to what God finds joy in, what God cares most about. Probably we all have relationships, whether kin or good friends, in which we learn what the other person likes and dislikes. Even without having to ask, it almost gets intuitive. So perhaps you'd be traveling or shopping for a gift, or not shopping for a gift, but all of a sudden it comes to you. And you'll say something like, oh, Karen would love these chocolates. And if you're not a skinflint, you might buy them for her. You know? Okay. Or Fred would get a kick out of these Argyle socks. Or maybe Chuck would hate this song. Or these Argyle socks. And you know you'd be right. Because you know them well, intimately, and they come to mind. Well, knowing God is something like this, except we discover that it goes beyond just knowing what delights God. As we come to know God ever more fully, our hearts begin to be shaped more and more toward God's heart. And we're steadily transformed until we share God's heart, until we ourselves delight in what God delights in. Let me offer a very practical example from our experience of living among Quakers in near New Bedford, Massachusetts. New Bedford, Massachusetts is a community with a historically large immigrant population, mostly connected with the fishing industry there. I resonate with that because my ancestors, going back, were fishermen, whalers actually, so kind of love to feel a harpoon once in a while, you know, that sort of thing. But anyway. Many of the fishermen have come from Portugal. And it turns out that after Portugal itself and Brazil, southeastern Massachusetts has the largest Portuguese-speaking population in the world. So it's a significant bunch. As you might expect, not all of these folks are fluent in English, and many of them have no notion of what to expect if you go to court. So they're not fluent in court either, for whatever reason. Among friends living in that area, some felt compassion toward folks in that situation and wanted to help make sure that when folks had to appear in court, they were treated in a just way. I don't know who had the idea, but it became widely shared among several friends in several friends' meetings in that area. So friends from those meetings joined in an expression of kindness and a concern for justice. And they set up a court-watching project. So they organized themselves so that any time court was in session, some of them were there to observe what happened. Observe how people were treated as they came to the courthouse, and what happened in the halls, what happened in the courtroom itself. And they came after 3 months of doing this, and it's kind of an organized effort to get people to show up in court every time it meets. They They got together and compared notes on what they'd saw, including how people were treated when they arrived and how clearly and fairly procedures were done in the courtroom, and more. And they drew up a list of suggestions for the court about how they might treat people who appear there more kindly and more justly. My memory is that the court welcomed their suggestions and made some significant changes. Now, this wasn't the sort of thing that made national news or even local headlines. I'm not even sure the local paper carried an article about it. But it made a difference to a lot of people, perhaps still does. And this was a simple outgrowth of people of God who shared God's delight in steadfast love and justice, and who looked for practical ways to live that out in their ordinary lives. So I invite us together to explore day to day what it means to walk humbly with God. Let's learn to walk in God's ways, constantly grounding ourselves and soaking in what God has so generously revealed to us. And let's steadily live in loyal love for God, deepening our allegiance to God and growing in our knowledge of God. And as we do this and are transformed, we will see more clearly how we can do justice and embrace steadfast love in our lives together and in the world around us.